Good day. Net worth going to zero. That's good, right? Hold up a sec. I'm eating a little bit of my ravioli here for lunch. Give me a sec. If you hear me chewing, it's my food. I feel like everyone's broke. Like, nobody has any money left. Because if they did, they'd be posting all sorts of stuff about what they're buying. Pretty much happens every season when we have a capitulation dump. There's almost nobody buying anything. Almost nobody picks up the bottoms of these, like, deep wicks. I remember 2020 in March, there was that COVID crash and the stock market and the crypto market, everything crashed, and BTC went down to like $3,500, and it was like the world is going to end and all that shit. And it was like max panic in this, you know, the oil markets got affected and everything went to shit. Right. And at the time it was like on social media, at least, and I wasn't on Twitter at the time, but I was like, I'm buying Bitcoin now. It's like $3,500. And people are like, I don't know, man. I think it's going to go to $1,000. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. Fuck it. I'm going to get some. And, typical story here. Same thing. Like, we had kind of like pre-halvening. We have everyone kind of loaded up, maybe a little bit buyer exhausted. You didn't hear a whole lot of people talking about any narratives. The AI narrative is getting boring. And I think everyone that was in the market was like, had their money all in already, waiting for new buyers to come and just chill. Or like, you know, people are leveraged up and ready to kind of like ride the bull market, you know, with, you know, BTC up to all time high. And we've been talking about this last month, like, you know, usually alts run after that and all that shit. Anyway, just like the opposite happened essentially, because I think everyone was seeing the same chart and everyone having the same idea. Everyone's all levered up and shit. So guess what? Like, you get one little news event, you get some shorts out there, and next thing you know, bam, everything crashes. Some of these like hedge funds and stuff are pretty predatory as well. They see bad news, they'll just hammer the short button pretty much and just like send a lot of money down. And as the liquidations start cascading, they know they can make a ton of money on that by attacking the market. Cause like, as people's stops get hit, as people's longs get liquidated, it just goes down, down, down. And then of course we had a bit of a dip, and then of course one more dip happened yesterday. And this sort of thing is fairly typical. So it's like, I tend to grab more on the way down, and just like, it's not a question of like timing everything right. It's just when you see capitulations in crypto market though, you have to buy some, you know, like find some money and get some somewhere. Because like these deals only come so often. But if you look at kind of the monthly candles of the charts and such, this is pretty normal, like even in a bull market, like to have these kind of dumps. Sometimes there's news that ties to them, sometimes there isn't. Take a coin like Chainlink or whatever. It's like, man, it had like, you know, taking a dump of 50% was pretty much like normal. Like, you think it's going up, it's like right about to break out, it's looking good, and then all of a sudden like dump. So it's like, this is pretty typical. Just like most of my positions, I just, you know, had them riding. Some of them are in the red now because like I bought them a bit higher, no big deal. It, you know, typically like you just give it time, things will go back up. Anyway, so I'm not too worried. It looks like the missile strike thing, most of them got shot out of the sky by either Israel or the US or whoever else. And things have sort of calmed down. That was kind of like the retaliation. I don't know if they're going to do anything else beyond that. So typically, if you look at these deep wicks down, it takes like the carnage from this sort of thing takes several months usually for the prices to go back up again. Maybe we get a V-shaped recovery and everything just goes straight back up to in the altcoin market. But if you look historically, it oftentimes took a few months to sort of trek on upwards again. I mean, go back to like 2020 March or any of these kind of like capitulation events, and it's taken like anywhere from 3 to 6 months to really fully recover. So I think that was your dip, and like you hopefully have a chance to grab whatever your favorite coins are over the next few months at reasonable prices, and then just kind of ride the net rest of the year. So it seems like we're not going to be that different from most other seasons in that, you know, there was a question of whether we'd have a big liquidation either pre or post halving or whatever. Well, now we've had the pre-halving dump, so that makes everyone happy. It might not feel like it now, but the thing is, like, new buyers are much more likely to come in at these prices, and they're more likely to hold for a higher ROI. So if you just simply wait at this point, you're really talking about, you know, the next 6 months should look pretty good, usually. That's assuming, of course, we have an altcoin bull market. Like, the worst FUD would be, like, there's a BTC bull market, but Total 3 doesn't really take off, and there really isn't much of an altcoin bull market. Is that possible? It's possible, I suppose, because a lot of people are, you know, maybe poorer at this point because of inflation and all that shit. It's possible that things don't run the way you might like them to, but let's see. Every other season, there was an altcoin season, and I think, I continue to assume that that's going to be the same. And this dip usually is the launch pad for that, because a lot of extra leverage in the system, and it just basically got completely just annihilated in terms of longs. And now I think like it's easier to move to the upside than it is to the downside overall. Unless, you know, people are still panic selling the bottoms and shit, which, you know, that happens sometimes. So it takes a little bit. People freak out, like they completely lose their shit, especially when they see portfolio drop. Like, what, where were we, like Chainlink 22 and it dropped to like 12 or something. So we're talking about really serious dumps in coins, like just about 50%. That's a big, serious liquidation all at one time. So you're going to have a lot of people pretty upset, depressed, disappointed with their bags and whatever. And it's just going to take time for them to like calm their mind down and then kind of like start investing again or whatever. But usually this type of dump, and I didn't know it was going to happen. I thought we were going to take off here. And this missile thing definitely put a damper on that. So it is what it is. But, you know, the question is like, is most of the pain gone? You know, is that event the last of it, or is there going to be some other bullshit going to happen? But hey, Cage, what you doing, man? I'm going to eat something while you talk.
What's up, C-Pop? So, like, with the whole missile launch thing, if we look at the market, like the four-year halving cycle, you talked about it in like one of your other spaces where last time it was COVID. COVID is what dumped everything. And now we have this World War III thing breaking out. Coincidentally, but I don't really believe in coincidences anymore. I don't know, I'm kind of like deep in my conspiracy bag on these type of things, where it's just like all these things just conveniently happen during these four-year cycles, where it's like always some big catastrophic event that just has the entire market take a shit, and they catch people on the hopium throwing excessive amounts of leverage on the market. And when these things happen, I don't know, it's just like, what would you call it, like covert money laundering or some shit? I don't know.
I think take Iran, for example. Like, you know, do they plan out their financial moves before? Like, do they, you know, short the market somewhere, you know, whatever, and then they do these things? I'm sure, like, it's quite, I mean, every government and every major government and their officials do a lot of insider trading type of shit. You know, this was sort of the theories, like, during 9/11, too, by the way. It was kind of like, you know, if you're going to launch this sort of crusade, wouldn't you make a bunch of money doing it? Like, wouldn't you short the market in different parts of the world, you know, things that are going to dump, and then you do that sort of shit? Probably, I would think so. You know, like, why, like, what kind of idiot wouldn't do that? So it seems like that would be the play. Now, is that what happens here? Now, the other thing, too, is like anytime markets are running hot, like stock market, whatever, doesn't matter what it is, you basically are close to buyer exhaustion anyway. And then the panic sellers start coming in and the market dumps. So, you know, a lot of markets are just like teetering on the edge and just waiting for something to kind of push it over, basically. I mean, look at the last month or so, like we had BTC kind of hovering, hasn't broken all-time high yet, or like not with conviction. And like alts definitely have been kind of like languishing, except for a few, you know, AI coins or something. And then over the past like 3, 4, or 5 months, like, you know, we had like meme narratives, we had all this other shit, but like not a lot of deep excitement in crypto in my, not is how I feel like. So probably still a good time to buy, still relatively early in the grand scheme of things. But if you look at crypto Twitter and how quiet it became regarding crypto, you know, you didn't hear a lot of people posting about a whole lot of anything. Like,
what are your thoughts on commodities, Safi, at the minute?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't. Well, the only major commodities that I own, like that I'm gonna trade or whatever, might be like oil and so like I have a lot of oil, and in that, like, if the stock market opens up this coming week with oil prices higher, typically what will happen is those prices will run for a good week or so. I might take some of my oil stocks and sell them and then swap them into crypto this coming week if we still have good deals in both directions. I can always buy back some oil shit like when it dumps again. But anytime there's like Middle East drama, it's like it's a given that oil price is going to run because everyone expects oil price to go up. So everyone dives in. And when did this happen? This was like Friday night, right? I think it might have been after market close that this happened. Am I mistaken? Or wait, was it yesterday? I'm losing track of time here. Like, that it was after Friday market close, right? All this shit happened? Or am I wrong?
Yep. Markets were closed.
Yeah. So, the effect on the markets, on the stock market, be Monday and whatever, right? So that'll give you a good feeling. Like, if the market dumps, stocks dump on Monday and oil goes up, which is kind of like the practical reality, then what I'll probably do is I'll sell my oil stocks, which I had like for the last 2 years that I bought, starting in October of like 21, I believe, 21. Yeah, 21. So I started buying then when everything was like at the bottom, and I could sell all that shit now, which is like, I have a bunch of stuff up like 40 to 100%. I started selling on Friday, but I couldn't move cash out of my system back to crypto because it wouldn't let me withdraw. So, and Bitcoin and all that hadn't quite dumped fully yet. So I didn't go ahead and buy in to like FBTC, like the Bitcoin ETF and all that. But I think what I'll do is I'll look at oil this week, let it run up a little bit, which is what typically happens, then sell it, then sell that, and then take that cash, move it over to either, you know, crypto exchange to start buying up whatever is down, or I'll take that money and I will convert it to FBTC, like just right in the ETF thing, because it's a lot less hassle for me to move a lot of money if I don't have to wait for fucking like transfers and all that nonsense. Because by that point, like, you know, the market will pump already, right? Because that's kind of part of the game. It's part of the reason why it takes some days for the crypto market to pump back up is people have to find money, right? They have to mobilize some money somewhere to buy some shit, and it takes a little while. So that's why it's like to have all your cash ready right then and there when the whole market dumps right at the bottom is really lucky. But this time I did not have that happen. I wasn't expecting this deep of a capitulation. Otherwise, I would have had cash like, you know, already moved and ready, but, you know, you can't see the future. So this time I didn't have like my cash laying around ready, but my commodity stuff, like particularly oil, since it's Middle East, I think that'll go up. I'll swap it out. I'll see if I can make a play this week. If it looks like it's going to take too long, like the altcoins are already pumping, which is quite possible, by the way, like within a week, they could just all be up again, back to their 200-day moving average and just jump. Like, it happened so many times in the past that like you'll miss it. So what I'm thinking is if BTC hasn't run yet, then, and I get lucky, I'll just swap out some oil stocks into BTC if it's at a good price, and maybe just add to that bag right there in the ETF, so I don't have to move cash anywhere. You know what I mean?
Isn't that like kind of what happened in like 2020 and like 2021 with like Doge and Ethereum Classic?
Yep. But that was 2020 December. That was right as BTC was breaking. All the alts started to take off and pretty much everything dumped right then too, by the way. If you look at the chart very closely, there was a nice like dump of the alts right before it took off. So these kind of like 30 to 50% volatility moves during a bull market are pretty common. It's always like annoying to people when you say it's a healthy correction and shit, because like they see their portfolio drop 40% and they're pretty pissed. But usually once that's out of the way, it's pretty much up only after that, because what else is left to sell? Like, who else is left to liquidate? It's only upwards, right? You have to liquidate shorts on the way up now. So that's what that's why they say, like, you know, it's easier to go up than down now. So I think this is bullish enough. And anyone who's on the sidelines worried that, hey, we're going to dump. And to be fair, you know, the prices of stuff were kind of rolling over, you know, like look at Link. It was like 22 and it had kind of been trickling down to, you know, 19, 18, 17, kind of rolled over already. So having a nice big dump and just liquidating everybody is generally better. And like if you have a long position that got liquidated, I don't mean to be rude or whatever, but like for people that are spot buyers like myself, that's what I want to see for continued upward movement. Because the simple way to always remember it is like leverage longs are future sellers. Because if you have a 5x leverage position at, let's say, pick a coin like $12 Chainlink, and now you're at $20 or whatever, guess what? You're going to sell because your 3x long has just printed you a ton of money. So the more leverage you take, the more fees you're paying, the sooner you're going to want to sell when the price goes up. So when you liquidate all these longs, you've essentially liquidated people that are otherwise going to be paper-handed sellers later. So equate leverage longs to paper hands, because these are not people that are going to ride out the bull market all the way necessarily, unless they're on a relatively low fee exchange. Like let's say you're on Aave or something, and let's say you have a Link open position there. You're not on heavy leverage, and it's like a fairly liquidation-free zone for a lot of people. So they can wait and hold on, but they're not on like 10x leverage or whatnot, right? Like those people are going to panic and sell on the way down. They're going to panic, like as the price starts to drop, they're seeing their gains disappear. They're selling. They're selling because they're getting liquidated. They're selling because they're covering. There's all sorts of stuff going on during those events that drive prices down deeply, very fast. And but it's a perfect capitulation. I mean, like this is. If you go back on charts the past 4 years, 5 years, you'll have many of these in a row. You'll have some during the bear market, of course, but you definitely have several during the bull markets too. So in a way, this is like the harbinger for the next leg up if we're going to have one. So let's see. I think this week, how stocks and everything respond is going to matter too. Because like, let's say the stock market, it's been running fucking hot too. Let's say you take a dump over there, like let's say 10% drop or 5% drop in the stock market. Let's not get too excited. 5 to 10%, let's say. And, you know, is that going to keep people from buying as much crypto? Probably. That's what's happened in the past. So if people are kind of taking risk off and all this, then maybe not as much money flows in crypto as quickly, which might be good if you're waiting. Like, let's say you have a job and you've got like the next 6 months. You're like, I'm making money. I want to buy some more coins in the next 6 months. This could have been like a godsend for you, because like basically you have more time to load up before some sort of, you know, more serious bull market comes up. But it just depends on your outlook. Like if you're all in and you're like, fuck, I just got liquidated, I lost all my money. Well, you're probably not in the same discussion as we are at this point. So it depends on what you've done with your money and what kind of like, you know, disaster you're in or whatever. Some places got really wrecked more than others. Like, for example, like on Osmosis, some of the coins depegged, like some of the stables and shit. Some of the stables, I think, depegged on one of the stables, I think, depegged on Binance, causing people to liquidate like crazy. So, yeah, these illiquid markets are good for the upside, but they're also wicked on the downside, because you wind up with crazy, like crazy ass, you know, downtrends. Like some of the coins on Osmosis were way below peg. Which is why, like, if you want the upside, think of trading on some of these DEXs. Like, think of altcoins as a leverage play on Bitcoin, and think of trading on some of these other fucking DEXs as a leverage play on altcoins. Like, and then you have like actual leverage on some exchanges, which can also be affected deeply by these crazy price moves. Take for example, the other day, like Chainlink was like on Coinbase was like $1 to $2 price difference compared to Binance. That's a big arb difference. So even the arbitrage folks were out of money, basically. Like they didn't know where to get money to make the arbs to buy the cheap coin in one place and go sell it in the other. So everyone was caught off sides and everything just went downhill. So like it's a good reset anyway. But yeah, Globert, what's up, man? What you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Sefi? Yeah, I just feel nothing these days since the massive collapse of Luna back in the day. It's just who cares? It's always we're going in one direction.
Yeah, that's the good thing about anybody that's survived a Luna crash. It's like you're like fuck it all. It doesn't like this is just normal.
Nothing.
Once you have a few things drop 99%, yeah, everything like at that point, yeah.
But it's quite interesting to watch everybody freak out, you know, and it's quite funny, you know. So everybody's like, oh my goodness, I've lost everything, you know. Oh well. Tough break. It's only the start.
No, there's definitely a lot of people that started buying at the altcoin like breakout. So that would be like around $8 to $10 for Chainlink, or it would be like, you know, 10 cents for Dogecoin, you know, numbers like this. So the fact that most people were almost at a 2x maybe at the top of that move. You know, the people that bought either at the breakout or below, and then now have sort of like given up most of those gains. Like there's plenty like myself who, with this drop, all that really happened is I lost some of my gains that I didn't sell into, but I didn't necessarily like, I'm not below where a lot of my positions were originally bought. So I'm still cool there. But yeah, like any positions I added to above these prices obviously are in the red. And that's just what it is. But what are you going to, you know, like, what are you going to do? You have no idea exactly. Like, this is why they say time in the market. Like, if you believe, say, for example, you know, like your coin is going to hit all time highs or some shit, then like buying somewhere in this range and picking up what you can is all you can really do. Because even the bear market, like when like Doge is a nickel and Chainlink's $5, there's still people that would be like, oh, it's going to go lower. It's going to go down to $1 Chainlink and Doge is going to go to, you know, a penny or something. So no matter how low you go, there's always going to be people flooding that number and saying, you know, like you don't know it's the bottom for sure. And what happens is most people just don't buy the bottom. They get greedy at the bottom and they want to wait till it goes down even lower. Cause like they'll say, hey, if I can get like, you know, one Dogecoin at 5 cents, well, I can get five of them at a penny or whatever, right? Like, so they in your people's mind, they get greedy even on the bottom end. So like, you know, most people don't pick up the dips with any significant conviction anyway, or are just simply out of money. That's the other possibility. Like you blow most of your money and you don't have any left.
I mean, that's where I am at the moment, to be honest with you. I mean, I literally cannot buy any more dips because, you know, well, but the car crisis is a disaster.
So it's
ridiculous. But I just want to buy more, you know, and it's just, oh, you know, oh well. But no, the whole thing is as well, I mean, how big a problem is this Israel thing? Or I mean, I don't think it's nothing. It's a nothing burger, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I think probably nothing's going to turn out of it.
Of course, I mean, oil money talks, you know.
Israel's basically too busy with their Gaza shit to be going and starting a whole other war fully. So I think they'll leave it at where it is now.
Yeah, I reckon.
They fired a bunch of missiles. They shot them all down. Everyone wasted a bunch of money. And yeah. A little tit for tat happened, and, you know, that's just what it is.
Save face and the propaganda in Iran will be, oh, yes, we got them back. Happy days, you know. Yeah. These are carry ons.
No, because if Iran did anything really, really serious, like escalated to a bigger thing, Iran's usually not about going to direct war. They like their proxy wars and shit. So this is like a warning shot. But like if they go to full on war, like number one, it gets very expensive for them very quickly. And the level of infrastructure damage Iran can suffer can be cataclysmic. Like,
yeah,
Israel can blow up a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot.
Fucking A, they can. Fucking A.
Yeah, they can. Like, so missile defense systems in Iran are nothing like they are with like carrier groups sitting outside of Israel and shit, like blowing everything away. with in Iran, like you can take out infrastructure left and right. Like if it's like the three, what is it called? The three, whatever, 3 years war, or whatever. It was, I forget the Israeli war names. Anyway, but
12 years.
There was one, the one where they went and just blasted everyone's infrastructure into oblivion. I don't remember which one that was, but oil platforms and things like that. You know, when you start wrecking serious infrastructure, you can send a country even the size of Iran into the Stone Age as far as like, so
yeah.
It's not risk-free for them to just fuck around. Yeah, like
no, it's not. Here's the thing. I mean, I remember whenever this whole thing started, even Gaza, you know, and I was like, holy shit, I can't believe they did that, you know, because I was like, oh my God, like Israel are literally going to turn Palestine into a fucking car park here, you know. It's not fucking funny, this one, you know, and everybody's like, oh, I'll be okay. You know? No, you're not. Listen to me. They will literally turn them into fucking Stone Age here, you know. It's bad news. It's really awful. You know, nobody likes them. But I don't really give a shit. As long as the golf's on this evening, I'm happy enough.
Yeah, Gaza looks like Beirut or something. You know, like when I remember when Beirut was like city devastation is crazy.
It's awful. Imagine, you know, well, obviously, you know, they have their leaders and they have their political ambitions and different things and whatever, you know. But I mean, even in a place that hopes for better, you know, I mean, you really need to be very wary of who you're dealing with beside you, you know, because holy shit, these guys aren't fucking around, you know, pardon my French, but I mean, they're not messing around, these guys. Yeah, it's not good, man.
I think SJ was trying to say something. SJ, you there? Like, were you trying to chime in earlier? SJL, are you there? How do you say your name, by the way? Is it Sill or SJL or what? Like, I don't know if he's there.
Don't think he's hanging out.
What's good?
I like your glasses. How are you?
What's up? Like my Vipers.
Oh, they're class, man.
Yeah, I
really want to get into MOG, by the way, whenever it first started, and I fucking forgot to buy, and now I don't know. How is MOG doing? I would like to find out. Is it low? Oh, well, I don't know.
Well, probably everything got wrecked right now.
Oh, yeah, well, do you know what? Maybe now is the time to buy the MOG.
Let's see. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure when people are going to get bored with the meme coins.
And yeah,
stuff. That's the thing. Like, these things last a while, and then you know, but momentum is lost, it's hard to get it back again.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, MOG is pretty cool when you just look at it. You know, those glasses, they're class. You know, just in general, it's a little bit funny and a bit of fun. You know, like, I mean, my PFP, like, it's like one of the, what do you call them things again? I can't remember now.
You bought so many PFPs, you have no idea what they are.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. the reason I have this one on this evening is because its name is Augusta. So I like a bit of the golf and stuff and different things. And so I just remember it being called Augusta. I have no idea why my name is Globert.
You know what? I started watching a little bit last night, which is a pretty good show. The Fallout TV show turned out to be pretty good.
Fallout?
Fallout, you know, like my PFP character, the...
Oh, yes, of course, yes, sir.
The ball boy, so...
They've got a TV show now?
Yeah, like, I don't know if you guys are fans of the video game. I was playing that game since, like, you know, I was a kid or whatever. And the latest TV show they produced is actually quite good, like, pretty good production quality. I just saw the first episode, so don't spoil it for me if you've seen it.
No spoilers.
It's quite good. Like, the production quality and everything is done up nice. So that's pretty good.
There must be a storyline to it, though, right? It's probably like you and Coach Bruce.
It's pretty much the story. It's like starts with the beginning of, like, it opens at the very beginning with, like, you know, the bombs dropping, which is how most of the Fallout video games start out that way. Like, nuclear war, they show it from the beginning, and then they show how people went into these vaults and then came out of the vaults, you know, a few hundred years later into a weird, like, fucked up world, you know, post-nuclear age or whatever. And it's mostly just, like, tongue-in-cheek sort of stuff. Like, a lot of the stuff is not meant to be like realistic or whatever. Like there's like zombies and other weirdos running around the landscape. It's a fun game. But yeah, they did a good job creating the show for it. It's nice.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's art touching life, I suppose, but in a small way. But yeah, you know, it's scary this happening in the world at the moment, you know. And like even my mother there last night, she's turned around and says, holy shit, I mean, what's going on here? Why are they shooting each other, you know?
I caught the Civil War movie that came out yesterday.
Oh, was that good?
It's fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Really good.
I like the other Apes movies. They were good. I haven't seen this one yet.
You need a bit of fear, though, don't you? Get it right going, you know? Create a bit of madness. Drop the markets, you know, 10%. And then, boom, bounce back, you know? You need a bit of madness in the world. That's the whole problem.
They didn't do a bad job with this other TV show. Wheel of Time is on, it's on Amazon. Same with Fallout. It's on Amazon as well. And the second season of it finished up. And it's kind of like this matriarchal society. Kind of a weird thing. It's like a bunch of women witches with a bunch of man books that follow them around. Like it's a funny like combination. But overall, the show is executed well. It's like it's done well. Yeah. It's a little bit like semi-woke in the sense that like, you know,
the last thing
a little bit overboard with like the racial diversity concept, but whatever.
Oh, well, this is the, I mean, that's always happening. I mean, the last thing I actually watched was Designated Survivor or something, you know, and I'm late to that game, but you know, I mean, there's nothing on TV at the moment, is there? You know, even well, over here, I mean, I'm in the UK here, so
Foundation on Apple TV is really good.
Foundation is good, yeah, it's really great.
I'll mark that.
Well, along with Dune and Foundations, like those are some of the classic sci-fi. So yeah, they did a great job. The Emperor, what's that guy's name who plays the Emperor Foundation? No, in Foundation, that guy was really good in that show.
Four people play Cleon. Do you mean the middle-aged guy?
The middle-aged Cleon. Good point. Good point. Everyone plays Cleon. No, the middle-aged guy, the guy that's like the main emperor, yeah.
So here's the thing about Dune. So like I sat and listened to you one night, Siffy, and I was like, oh, and you're like, yeah, well, do you know what? I really like the first Dune, by the way, back in the day. And I was like, okay, well, do you know what? All of this nonsense about this new Dune, I'm going to watch the first one. Holy shit, that's a really crazy film.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, right.
you know the guy that played, what's his
Lee
name?
Pace
the guy
is
that
so played, fucking hot, oh my God.
The guy that plays, Paul Atreides in the first Dune movie, he's actually the overseer in Fallout in the first episode. He's in there.
Okay. All right.
I was like, holy shit, it's Paul Atreides is the overseer of Dune in Fallout.
Oh well, listen. I haven't even got around to watching the new fall or the new like Dune yet because that was a crazy. This is like, hold on, Blade Runner, for instance. I haven't watched Blade Runner.
Seen Blade Runner 2049.
I haven't watched the first one, believe it or not. And I am a big.
I'll confess now. I haven't seen Back to the Future.
Well, get yourself a DeLorean.
Yeah, no.
I figure I'll like get a girlfriend and then I'm just not be bothered.
Well, listen, we can all confess our sins here, but I mean, you know, so where I'm from in the world is like Belfast, and we built them. You know, the DeLoreans over here. That guy was a crazy guy. He John DeLorean. Wow, came over and built like a load of factories, like in the middle of the big, massive.
The DeLorean guy.
Yeah.
Actually, with the Blade Runner reference reminds me. So, Blade Runner, the new movie. I remember.
Yes, it's partly amazing. My very good friend, by the way, has said, "Oh my god, you want to see this? You want to see this show, man?"
Well, interesting thing is, I was going to California for a trip, and where was it? Los Angeles specifically, and in Los Angeles, there's a guy that I follow on one of the like audio forums, like, you know, the audiophile forums, you know, where people create home theaters.
Yeah, yeah, I know you're
interested. So I'd known this guy for a bit. I knew he was in Los Angeles. And I was like, hey, dude, I'm going to go. I'm coming over to your house. Like, if you want me, I'm going to come and check out your equipment and everything. Because he and I chatted a lot about technical shit for a long time. So just like random guy on the internet. And interesting guy. Like, he ended up being a guy that married an Indian woman, just like I did, which is interesting.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't know the guy at all, like, you know, until I met him at his house. And he demoed he had a very, very specific home theater build he built, which is like, he's interesting. Like, he hand built it. He built the entire room, the construction, everything. He built everything himself. Like, he's an engineer at some aircraft company or some shit. McDonnell Douglas, I believe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he, built this place. And I remember the demo he showed me was Billy Joyner 2. On there. So that just kind of struck up that memory just now of that like random road trip I made meet some guy off the internet.
Hey, he must have some speakers. Yeah.
What did you watch it on? Sorry, it was on a projection, was it?
Yeah, projection. He built a theater space and he used very specific speakers called Danley Sound Labs. What that wasn't even the magic part of it. He just had a really interesting sort of like build for this particular room with like front and rear, like 3 foot thick foam baffle walls, which basically are meant to like subdue standing waves for bass. I don't want to get too far into the audiophile nerd.
No, go ahead.
Well designed audio room. And he gets a lot of questions on the internet about how he built it and replicating it. In fact, a design I built, created for my brother's house, has that design. In fact, my brother went with me at the time and we were just sort of taking notes because we were going to build this something, some of the similar design features we were going to build into it. So I have a kind of really wicked media room type of thing too. But between that guy and my design, we've merged those two designs, like the best of the two capabilities into what my brother's designed, which is kind of cool. So it just like fun times on the internet kind of thing. But that, just the Blade Runner reference is to remind me of that for some reason.
Cool. I mean, I haven't watched the Bloody film yet. So
you should. They're both good.
Yeah, it's crazy I haven't seen it before. And I'm really getting told, you need to watch that film. It's really good, you know. It's Harrison Ford, the first one, isn't it?
Did you watch the second one? Oh, man. Did you watch Matrix Resurrections, Clover? Or sorry.
The most recent one, right?
No, you want to hear this. Fall Office is an absolute classic. So back in the day, when did that come out, the third one? Was it 2005,
I want to say?
I think Revolution was the third one, right?
Yeah, so that's the last one, isn't it? Like, so it was 20 years ago?
Yeah.
All right, so I don't want to tell everybody my age or something, you know, but it's quite funny because, so we went to the cinema, my friend and I. And matinee, and the place was completely empty. And so we decided that we would get a couple of drinks, put them into the, the Coca-Cola. And for the first time in my life ever, I sat there with my friend and we just smoked and drank through the whole film. Not one children, trying to kick you. Up behind you, and we just sat there and drank and smoked the whole way through. And eventually, somebody tapped us on the shoulder. Says, "Well, that's enough." I'm like, "That's okay. The film's over." Walked out. Happy days. But I didn't like the film.
You broke the rules. You broke out of the Matrix in that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We're just sitting there, you know, a big
life imitating like reality or whatever.
Yeah,
art imitating life.
Just sat in there. Obviously, it's completely illegal to smoke. You know, we just smoked our way through the whole film. You know,
class. Yeah, you should like scream fire in the movie theater too if it's the Matrix.
Don't be doing that. No. Oh, jeepers.
What did you think of? Oh God, you know the Neil Patrick Harris's character, the analyst, Safu.
In which one?
On the Matrix? Is that the guy that's the...
Oh, in the new
the newest movie.
Yeah, the one that just came out.
Man, I don't remember it that well. I have to watch it again. It was okay. He was like a VR game creator, right, or something like that.
He took over from the architect to mine suffering out of Neo.
I can't even remember. Are you talking about the guy that's like the shit Neo constantly, or what's going on here?
Did you like that movie, or you didn't like it? The new Matrix.
I thought the Matrix, the Matrix One was brilliant. I thought, and all the ones after it were kind of rubbish, to be honest with you, in my opinion.
I liked generally all the first three. The last one, I felt like, I'm not that critical of sci-fi generally. Like, I tend to give it sci-fi the benefit of the doubt, and I like
100%. Yeah,
I suspend disbelief a bit. You know, if you watch enough anime and other bullshit, like, the reality is you learn how to suspend disbelief well enough to enjoy everything. Well, like, you know, but so I thought Fourth Matrix was okay. It was like it was watchable, but a lot of people probably hated it.
The score of Matrix Resurrected is so fucking good, isn't it? Oh my god!
Yeah, of course.
If you, I mean, in term, if you want to watch a really good sci-fi show, and say, for instance, I mean, you've never seen sci-fi in your life, right? And you just you're an alien, and you've just arrived on the planet, and you show them the Terminator film, the first Terminator, and then you see show them the second Terminator. And then you show them the third. I mean, and then you show them the fourth. I mean, every one of the films are.
And then, like, the aliens are going to think that human beings are obsessed with time travel or something.
Yeah, right.
Kill robots and time travel.
But every one of those films are brilliant. Even the one, what's the most recent one that Sarah Connor came back in? And I think it was like.
Well, there's usually like killer robot movies, and then there's like. Then there's time travel movies. And this is the killer robots plus time travel movie.
Yeah. So it's like.
It's like double whammy.
Do you know, if you want to know which, if I had to choose out of all the shows that I've ever watched, and kind of what is coming true a little bit, which is kind of like brilliant as well, you have to go to Demolition Man. Demolition Man was an absolute fantastic show.
This was what, Sylvester Stallone or something?
Stallone, yeah. I mean, it really was. That's a cracking movie, by the way. If anybody hasn't watched Demolition Man, just watch it.
It has been a long time. I don't even remember
Oh man, it's really, really good, and it's starting to come true. Some of the stuff as well, you know, it's cracker.
That was good. Wesley Snipes in Rocky Balboa, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Wesley Snipes.
Yeah. Literally, and the thing was, like, you know, their big action scene was like, oh, and this is like in 1984, and this is, you know, after the earthquake, and like after, you know, so all our time was suspended, you know, and then they're just. And they're kicking ass, and
speaking of Wesley Snipes, remember Wesley Snipes in that Blade? That's a funny series.
Oh, he's really good.
This is a side note. Do you remember Ryan Reynolds in Blade?
Ooh, I don't remember that.
No, don't know.
He was like Blade 3.
Ooh, that was like Blade 3, Blade Trinity.
Man, Blade, it's been a while. Trinity, I need to watch the Blade movies again. Man. Ryan Reynolds. That'll take you back.
People call me Nepali Ryan Reynolds. I mean, the women of my town also call me. I am kind of Nepali Ryan Reynolds, you know?
Oh, the Nepali Ryan Reynolds. Kancha, yeah. Kancha's famous in Nepal, by the way, guys. Like, you guys don't realize.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. He'll go into town, and, like, there'll be people bowing at his feet and stuff. It's crazy shit.
I have a funny feeling that most people on this podcast might be, a little bit famous, and you know, keeping it on down low. Anyway, I gotta go to the toilet. Back in a minute.
Yeah, Concha, are the people leaving you alone, or are they still throwing like flowers at you when you're walking down the street?
Yes, I mean, the ladies like hot chicks in Nepal. They love me, you know. And what is the main topic today? Missiles everywhere, everything going to zero. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's just war.
What war?
All your cryptos are going to zero, yeah.
No, my crypto is not going to zero. I hold injected.
In Nepal, you're shielded from it. That's why.
Yes. And the war thing, which war you are talking? China versus Taiwan?
Oh, no. Iran versus Israel today, or the last 2 days.
Iran also start war?
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. I know. You guys get the news late in Nepal.
No, we don't have any kind of news channel in Nepal.
Oh, whatever you hear on Twitter Spaces, huh?
Yes.
Yep.
You know, I see some kind of missile inside top of Himalaya yesterday.
Did you really? Do they have missile launchers in the mountain?
Yes, it kind of looks like missile. I thought it looks like kind of penis, and also, you know, like in the penis. Cloud. Yes, missiles like is penis. You know, it's exactly like shape penis. Of penis.
Mm.
I saw that yesterday.
Was it the same side? Surface to air missile installation?
I think it's like just some sort of flying penis, man. Like, the Nepalese have a way of like just keeping everything like really simple. Missile looks like penis.
Fucking Elon's rocket looks like a penis, but I think Bezos's rocket, the Blue Origin's rocket, is the most phallic by a factor of 1.5.
Oh, the most phallic. Is there a phallic factor? Is it like a scale of like 1 to 10 or something?
Yeah, and it's logarithmic.
Oh, phallus logarithmic exponential multiplier. All right. Sandy, what are you up to?
Well, I should have stepped up here at a bad time. I am not an expert at all on anything phallic since I had my son.
Are you an expert on like Iranian Israel geopolitics?
Well, here's what I want to tell you. I can actually bring you some observations and some facts about. So you say missiles everywhere, everything going to zero. Well, I'll tell you what's not going to zero. Crypto may be going to zero. But the price of gas is doubled. So the price of the U.S. dollar in Iran on the ground has like ridiculously gone up. Everybody basically has been making a run on the bank, filling up their gas and getting ready. And you're dealing with a population with a middle-aged population.
I feel good. Like my coins have all gone to zero, but I did in fact get a full tank of gas right before the missiles launched, exactly. Which is very exciting.
Exactly. So, you know, things may be going to zero, but there's going to be major. And you know what? For all those people who think it doesn't matter on the other side, guess what? The price of oil jumped. Your gas is going to go up, and then everything's going to go up. Okay, so. For the people who just, you know, don't have the capacity to understand how all this is connected, I'm just sorry for you. You're just going to be one of those people who's going to get on Twitter Spaces and scream about, you know, foreigners coming to take your job, which you're right, they are.
Sunday. Okay, what's a historian? Is a historiographer a historian that's into biographies?
So what was your question?
Yes, go ahead, SJ.
Am I into history? What?
What's a historiographer?
Okay, so a historiographer is just somebody who just wants to seriously document history and facts. So I've had years of experience being a librarian, writing things, and so a historiographer. We need historiographers on the blockchain to document what's happening. I interview artists, I interview people in design, and we record that forever so that, you know, 300 years, 400 years from now, if blockchain's still around, people are going to want to know why all this happened. How did
you have a lot of noise in your mic, by the way. It's hard to hear you at all.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Maybe because you're walking or rustling and stuff.
Yeah, I'm outside in the rain. That's okay. Getting fresh air. So, yeah, anyway, historiographer documents things. We just want to, you know, put the facts. I worked at UC Berkeley Library for years, and I was a bibliographer. So I, back in the day, you had to go and look in a Rolodex to find books, and I translated and I cataloged 2 years worth of just, you know, all these books that had been donated to Berkeley Library.
What language, sorry?
Farsi to English. So I have literacy really good in English, and I also have pretty decent literacy in Farsi. So I record things. I interview people. I record spaces, and I try to help people understand how all this crypto and the economy and the politics and the elections and the price of gas is all connected, and how
a lot of the Farsi speaking Irani crowd are not particularly interested in the regime there, quite frankly. My in-laws at some point used to live in Iran for a while. They lived there for like 7 years. My sister-in-law was born there. They weren't originally from Iran, but they lived there back in, this is before the Shah of Iran was deposed. And my father-in-law still, well, he's dead now, but he used to bitch about
the times back then.
He used to bitch about the Jimmy Carter and his role in like and the U.S. role in getting rid of the Shah, or not supporting the Shah, or however you want to look at it. And that kind of led to the current regime kind of going into power and basically fucked over Iran. And most Iranians who are not, you know, who are not, number one, not all people in Iran are Muslim, first of all. So like and a lot of people are, Farsi speakers, like you said, and really had no interest in that regime change at the time. Pretty interesting area.
Yep, that's 100%. Iranian women are beautiful, by the way. Absolutely beautiful.
There's a lot of beautiful people in Iran. Yeah, that's true.
Beautiful.
Okay, thanks for saying that. I didn't know this, but according to somebody, they said that Chinese people think that Persian moms are the best moms in the world. That according to them, Persian moms are the most beautiful and the best mom you could have. And I had a Salvadorian boyfriend who told me that over there, it's their dream to get together with, you know, a girl from 1001 nights.
Like, it's going to be like it's a Persian milk.
Yeah, I've made fantasies come true. So it's kind of funny. I'm not young anymore, but during my young days, yeah, that was a thing. So, and the funny part is they hate the men, but they love the women. They hate the men, but love the women. And so I got lucky.
Very good.
Have you traveled much in Central America, Sandy?
Yeah, I actually was a travel agent before COVID. That was my side gig. I do cruises, travel around the world. And I love Latin America, the Caribbean countries. And so it's very interesting when you do travel and you go to all these tiny little islands, and the main store and the economy of that is owned by a Chinese family. So people have no idea how powerful the economy of China is in the American continent, unless they've actually traveled on the ground and seen. So everybody talks about Iran, Israel, but you should really be talking about China.
We are talking about China because someone mentioned Taiwan.
Hey, I have a question. Like, I have my friend who took my money. He's from China. Fuck. His name is Fuck Li. I mean, Fu Hak Li, his name. Fu Hak Li. Do you know him?
No, what's his name?
Fu Hak Li.
Class.
It's Fu Hak Li. It's not Fuck Li. It's Fu Hak Li. I'm searching him from last year.
Oh, you want your money back? So Chinese man in Nepal stole your money, and now you want your money back.
Yes.
My friend, I think I'm pretty sure it's gone. I don't want to be rude, but like I think you lost your money.
Sandy know lots about China. So if she knows about Fu Hak, so please tell me where is he?
By the way, Do Kwon was South Korean, not Chinese.
Yeah. I mean, not and talking about the one. I am talking about Fuhagli. Fuhagli. Fuhagli.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you maybe you'd mistaken him for Do Kwon.
Well, listen, I'm going to go watch the Masters here. I love the golf, so.
See you later, buddy.
Oh, fucking Tiger's killing it, man.
Oh, he's not killing it. He's not killing it today. Rory McIlroy. He's from my town, so. Literally, he's only up the road. Like, you know, it's crazy. Maybe next year, eh? Usual. Peace out. Talk to you
later.
Soon.
See you later.
What's up, Sophie?
Yeah, what's going on, man?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're okay. Your voice is a little bit muffled.
Cool. Sorry, I'm out at Circuit of the Americas right now for the MotoGP races, and it's fucking
awesome. Circuit of the Americas. That's where Austin or what?
Austin, Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's driving out there today? What race is it?
Well, they've got Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP races. They also had this stuff called King of the Baggers, which is like Harley's racing, which is pretty cool. Saw, I think, 8 crashes over the past 2 days. It's been fucking awesome. Actually, an American just took second in Moto2, which is pretty fucking cool. There's like no American racers in MotoGP.
Interesting. I haven't been to that track out there in Austin. I think when I was in Austin last, I believe I drove by nearby there, but I'd never actually went to a race yet.
Yeah, it's been odd. I had someone text me. It's like, have you looked at the markets lately? I'm like, no, I've been watching motorcycle races all weekend. And,
yeah, good time to ignore everything while it goes down and then goes back up again.
I couldn't have cared less about the market. Yeah, I lost money, but I'm also having a ton of fun here, so it stings a little bit less.
That's good. Sounds like it's a pretty good crowd. I can hear them out there.
Oh, there's probably 100,000 people out here, so. There's only one MotoGP race in the U.S. each year, so. People come out in droves.
My son was really interested in going to that F1 race that was out in Vegas like last year, but we missed it. Or we didn't really plan it basically well, but like that would have been pretty fun too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is my first MotoGP race I've been to, and it's kind of got me wanting to go check out some Formula One races. I've got friends that have been to Silverstone.
F1 Miami is going off.
When is that?
Oh, no, it's just the company. I can look up the website, though.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know there's a few F1 races in the U.S. Just never been to one, but after seeing the MotoGP, kind of want to go check out some of the other really high-performance racing. Seth, have you ever taken any of your cars onto a track?
Yeah, I just posted about that, like, day before yesterday, I think. So I was not paying attention to the market because I was tracking my car for the first time.
Let's fucking go.
So I have the 718 Spider. So I took that. Its top speed's like 185, I think. I didn't quite push it that hard. But going like 175 in a convertible is pretty fun.
It's May 4th, 2025.
Yes. So the Spider's a convertible. So it's like, you know, windows down and everything. It's like a hurricane rushing around you. It's pretty awesome. But it's got like, it's a GT car. So it's basically meant to be driven on a track. It can, the tires and everything can handle it. It's like these Michelin Cup 2 tires are pretty soft, like pretty sticky. You know, like by the time I stop the car, it's like, you know, the smell of burning rubber everywhere. And like, it's got basically a 911 engine in a tiny little, think about a Mazda Miata with like a 911 engine in it. That's basically what this is. So it's just a pocket rocket. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome to hear.
I'm not trying to destroy the car though. I just mostly just went to just fuck around a little bit. I'm not like trying to pose as some kind of like super race car driver or something.
Oh yeah. I've got my first day on the track with my bike in about a month. I'm super pumped for it.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, there's a family of ours that lives close to that Berkeley area, and he's got a little Lotus Elise. It's another tiny little pocket rocket car, and he goes and takes it to
Laguna Seca. I'm not sure exactly where that is in California, but he goes and roams. He like, it's like a notoriously unreliable car. So he'll like fuck around with it in Laguna Seca, and then he'll take it home and fix it for the next 6 months, and then take it to Laguna Seca and then fuck around with his next 6 months. So it's like a, it's just like a work in progress at all times. It's really kind of funny.
Oh, but that's how all the cars are, honey. They come to our shop, we fix one thing, they get better, they go back on the road. So my family just celebrated 35 years in Laguna Beach fixing these awesome cars. Yeah. So that's funny. I'm a total car enthusiast.
So your family does what? Like, is involved with?
We are the only AAA approved repair shop in the city of Laguna Beach, California. Laguna Auto Service. Oh, we specialty cars. Yeah, it's like we do everything. You know, we do small stuff and then we do specialty stuff because these people in Laguna Beach, like yourself, have very special cars. And by the way, drop me your OmniFlix wallet address. I just am dropping an NFT collection about these dream cars. Because I love cars, and so I did a collaboration where I you know, these cars are decked out in Persian rugs and pearls, and my dad was a Persian rug dealer in Iran. Any major city in Germany, all those rug plates, they're all my uncles.
Persian rug. I own a bunch of Kashmiri rugs, but not Persian.
Wow. Anyway,
interesting.
Yeah, my dad didn't go in the rug business in the U.S. He went in the car business because it's a different economy. And by the way, one day I'd like to talk about your son and my son and what I like to term the vague economy. Because this younger generation, the way they're doing business, the way they're doing things is so different. Nobody can grasp it. It's impossible. Even me as a professional
economist. Can I talk about it?
Please, because this is something that's happening and these young people are having a thriving economy and nobody's really talking about it or grasping it because they can't. So,
like in 2020, the Nobel Prize for Economics went to a guy that demonstrated that the economy, the resource that's used is trust. And young people like, where they place their trust is like one of their most precious things. So if they're going to place their trust in like an institution, they need to know it's like real Gucci.
Hmm. Well, my big one's going to be coming out to Palo Alto and all that next to come in over this summer for sure. So he's doing that like, I think he's taken that position with Neuralink. So that should be an interesting year. I don't know if he's going to stick with that or if he's going to try to like collaborate in the future, maybe do like medical school while doing Neuralink afterwards. So this 1 year he's going to do Neuralink and then he's going to work on going to medical school. So I don't know if like he has a in there to get into Stanford over there for medical, possibly if he has some collaboration with them or something. He's trying different things. Should be interesting. Should make for some interesting stories. Although he has like NDAs and shit he has to sign. So I don't know how much he can really say, but enough, I'm sure.
Hey, Seffy, I gotta drop. MotoGP warm-ups are happening. 2:00.
Oh, yeah. Hit it, man. Have a good day.
Anyways, see you guys later. Peace.
Yep. Cool. Yep, that's fun. MotoGP. Haven't seen that before. In fact, I haven't been to an actual race ever. At a track, like I haven't ever been to one. I don't know why. When we were in France last summer, the boys were really super interested in going to Le Mans. But when we were there, the like we already had a whole bunch of like itinerary and tickets and like hotels and all sorts of shit already reserved. I'm like, I wasn't planning on switching that whole itinerary out to go to the race, but it would probably be really fun going to Le Mans as a trip. A specific trip.
Holy shit, it would. Yeah,
just head out to Paris and then go and do that for, you know, the weekend or whatever. A lot of people did that. Like a lot of people that were flying on the plane right around the time we were flying were people that were going there specifically for the race.
Would you get a camper van?
Ooh, I don't know.
Hey, Sophie, I got blue tick. You can see.
Oh my god,
Rapist Baba token, decentralized guru. He has the official blue tick of the Rapist Baba token coin.
Next coin is coming.
They give those fucking blue ticks away to everyone these days.
Yeah, they are giving everywhere. It's only for money, you know? Business.
Yeah, if anyone doesn't know, like, Decentralized Guru has created a coin called the Rapist Baba token, the RBT, and it's to call attention to the some of the sort of like spiritual leaders in India who actually are committing acts of like sexual crimes and what have you. Hence the name Rapist Baba token. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, the fake gods everywhere, and this god type of things, and this religion is the main base. I mean, the core reason for every kind of war. You know, you can see the Iran versus Israel. This war is also, there is a hidden reason is religion, and that's a fucking bullshit thing, and we have to stop this. Stop these motherfuckers.
Is the purpose of spiritual seeking immortality, do you think?
Yes, we have to stop these motherfuckers. You know, these kind of motherfuckers who are getting, you know, they are going forward and they are which are promoting themselves like a god. And you can see craziness in India. Thousands of people worship this guy. It's millions. And this guy is raped like 39 or 40 raped. Innocent omens and also murdered, and this kind of things is going on in third worlds, and now you have to pay these prices. Why? When these countries are engaging wars, these countries are now strong, getting stronger, and they are creating missiles, nuclear bombs, and how this impacts, you can see the petrol prices.
Do you think UFOs like the Greys have like seriously powerful war technology and they just like hang out with us?
Going on a different path here. There is I saw a documentary yesterday called, I'm not sure why I watched it. It was just listed number one on top whatever on HBO's list of shit to watch. So I kind of picked it up for that reason. Anyways, a documentary called Brandy Hellville, which is basically about the brand name Brandy Melville, which I had no idea about. It's like a teenage girl thing, I guess. And it's about like the sequence of events around the social media like explosion of this particular brand, of this random Italian dude who basically like makes a bunch of little like plus, I guess, size zero type clothes. And basically every single like it's there's only one size, and the size of the clothes is just to fit like tiny kind of like the look is for tiny white girls or something. And the whole thing is very interesting. I thought it was a super interesting documentary. They go off the beaten path a little bit talking about like fast fashion.
Is this how, in the 2000s or like recent?
No, it just came out. Like, I don't know when this brand became a thing, cause I don't really know. I think it's, I've never heard of the brand personally, but I guess it's like a teenage girl brand, Brandy Melville. And, the entire thing is interesting. I think it's worth watching just from the perspective of understanding like the social media enterprise and how like Chinese clothing manufacturing leads to like tons and tons of junk clothing. And another interesting side thing they went into is like the effect of fast fashion on the environment and dumping tons and tons of like used clothes in like Ghana and Africa and shit, and creating like gigantic trash piles of in the ocean and on the land and stuff. Like, now they sort of blame this brand and they kind of make it a catch-all blame. It's like one of these like, you know, Rage Against the Machine type of documentaries, you know, like Super Size Me and shit like that. It's against a specific industry more than it is that particular
sort brand. Like a Seaspiracy sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like this like,
but you know what, you're right, Seth. You know, I'm just gonna jump in, because in the 80s I used to go to thrift stores when I got out of college and I had to go work in corporate America at Wells Fargo Bank in San Francisco. I bought Chanel suits size 6 at the thrift store. And then I could take the train and go to San Francisco and work. There was nice stuff in the thrift store and those things, you know. But now it's not like that. I could never go to a thrift store, buy anything, because it's like disposable clothing. And even stores like Macy's, like you could go to Macy's and everything was nice. The quality was nice. The stitching was nice. But now it's just all got cheap. And it wasn't just Macy's.
Part of it too is this, like, the Instagram thing, though. Yeah. You have to be really cheap in order to take lots of Instagram pictures. Imagine you're a teenage girl and you're like, you want to get a bunch of views on Instagram. Like having the same really nice t-shirt that you wear, you know, every week because you only have one t-shirt, it's harder to reach an audience, I guess. Like the fast fashion thing is like, I guess Zara and H&M and whatever these stores are that have like really, really cheap clothes, but you can go through tons and tons of them and just basically like cycle through them. Is kind of what this this show is sort of describing, but this is just one brand that was very, very like specific.
Were they targeted with remedial action?
No, no. Like the yeah, like they were extremely specific in their target demographic, and they're definitely not trying to be sort of racially inclusive or something like that. They had their target demographic.
By the way, we never had a size zero. In the 80s, it didn't exist. You went to the
store, like toddler size.
Because I'm older, right? So when I went to the store in the grown-up section, the smallest size that there was like a 4. You know, there wasn't even a 2 then. And then I remember when 2 came about, and that was when we had that whole anorexia bulimia thing. Girls were throwing up their food so they could wear these skinny things. And that was before social media. So before any of this happened, they tricked us into, you know, needing to be skinny anorexic people and also consuming, because God forbid you cannot wear the same outfit to work in the same week or to school twice. So this was already downloaded into the culture of
interestingly, having watched this whole trend the last 20 years, I'd say the anorexia trend was not as bad as the obesity trend, which is very interesting. Like obviously neither extreme is particularly good for you, but in the aggregate, if you look at overall society, the number of people that were suffering and dying or having really bad disease from anorexia was a relatively small minority, as opposed to the number of people now that every other person's hospitalized with obesity-related things. So it's a little bit interesting how if you push a society, it's hard to push a society to the middle. You either have to go to one extreme or the other, because like that's just sort of what happens. But interestingly, like the obesity society appears to be even more unhealthy than the weird anorexic society, which the bulimics and the anorexics, they have their problems, obviously. I'm not advocating for it.
And they made it fashionable to be fat. God forbid you said anything. Did. You know what? You know, it was called fat shaming. And by the way, I actually did get fat. After I had my baby and I was nursing and I'm a food allergy. So I actually was in the obese thing during my first 2 years after my baby. And
whenever someone says obese, though, like if that's based on BMI, BMI is bullshit. So
no. Yeah. But dude, I was obese. Like my ass would knock over your water glass on your table, because in my head, I thought I was still a size 6, but my ass was really a size 16. So, you know, that happened. It was real. Yeah. And I knew that I was going to deal with it, that before my son got into school, I was going to figure it out. I'd be done nursing. And I was a single mom. So a lot was happening. But the thing is, people don't want to help you. When you go into stores, that whole fat shaming is real. People judge you. And this is Southern California. And then after I got fit again, society responded different to me. But then, like you said, this whole obesity thing, like on the plane back from New York, the big guy next to me was like all in my seat for 6.5 hours. This man had leaned into me from New York City, and he smelled and he was hot. And there was no way I could separate my arms and legs from him. It was just the most uncomfortable thing.
I've been extraordinary. Yeah. Now that I think about it, I've been extraordinarily lucky on airplanes. I've never had to deal with that before.
Dude, I pray for a mother with a teething child over a huge obese person spilling into my seat. By the way, thanks for the recommendation on the film. I'm going to go check it out. And while we're on recommendations during this time, if you need to get out of your head, go on Amazon and check out Mount Shasta. It is one of the most mysterious places on our planet. It's a really good documentary, not just about the mysteries of Mount Shasta, but actually about the history of this country and who wrote history. So it's a worthwhile $4 to go. Mount Shasta on Amazon. Yeah.
It's a book or it's a movie?
Mount Shasta?
Mount Shasta. So Mountain Shasta, you know, is about an hour away from Bishop in California. It's one of the highest mountain ranges. Okay. It's a very mysterious place. And apparently there's all these caves and people who found treasures and then they go to go get their posse and to go get this treasure, they like disappear. So
I was on one of the alien spaces and there's some like avid sort of like alien freaks on Twitter. And I like to frequent the alien spaces from time to time because they're just very interesting.
There's petroglyphs there. So I'm going to make a trip with a photographer friend and we're going to go photograph the petroglyphs out Mount Shasta in California for you because I didn't know it was so mysterious. But I'm not going to do what those other people did and try to go find treasure and get lost. Yeah. No, I'm not doing that. I'm just
This is the place where the alien there's a guy that we know that periodically gets like probed by aliens and stuff. His name is I can't remember his name right now.
Chris Bledsoe?
Third Eye or something. No, he had like he's a guy. He's pretty sure that Mount Shasta is the one. This is where the alien witch bitches live.
Isn't it dimensional portals or something?
Yeah, and in those dimensional portals, that's where like the alien witch bitches come out, according to him. That's a direct quote from what he calls them.
It sounds like bullshit, you know. It just sounds like a Hollywood.
No, dude.
This documentary, it's compelling.
Watch this documentary. No, I'm not a bullshitty person. I'm a retired scientist. I've been in the lab many years. I don't do bullshit. But you got to go. I'm going to make a trip to go see myself. I've always driven past it because we'd go to Mammoth Mountains, which is another beautiful, you know, historical place. But I've never actually gone. And I didn't know there were petroglyphs in Mount Shasta. So, no, that's not bullshit. That's just history, dude.
The one I really want to go to is the one that Graham Hancock writes about in Supernatural, the 18,000-year-old or whatever in France or whatever it is in the cave.
Oh, yeah. So those castles they have in France, they're built on top of these caves that connect, you know, miles around in cities. Yeah, so they didn't make those caves. They built those castles on top of those cave entrances.
Only thing is I'm watching the preview here and I'm like really, really worried about spending $3 on this movie.
$73 for a movie.
Yeah, in Indian money, Bikram, like this would not work out for you.
Yes, absolutely.
You'd be like, fuck it, let the thing stay a mystery is what you're going to say.
Yes, let the thing stay a mystery. I don't want to spend $73.
$3.
$3.
$3, not 73.
I think he's converting to like rupees or some shit, which is
$3 guy can afford it. $3 is not that good, not that big.
What is it like? It's 70 or 80 rupees for a dollar or something?
70 or 80. It's not
you
that big.
You won't be able to eat for like a week or something if you watch this thing.
No, bro.
I'm not struggling with poverty.
I'm not struggling with poverty, bro. It's not like, you know, the Indian for Indian sea, you know, that's mean hungry guy. You know, I am not that guy standing on the street and
begging
for money.
You can't be
doing
too bad. You got a blue tick on the thing. You're paying a subscription for this stupid app, like the rest.
Yes, I paid subscription for my fake app of the fake application. Also, you know,
dude, I love your spaces. I don't know. You have to be really intelligent to get your jokes. There is just so much satire. I love it. Thank you. I needed this break from getting out of my head. I didn't sleep at all last night watching those damn missiles.
Yeah, that'll scare us all. Although this wasn't nearly as bad as like the COVID crash hysteria of March of 2020, that's for sure. That was a whole nother level.
By the way, I had to get reimbursed for some expenses in New York City, and it was in crypto. So I have U.S. dollar credit cards to pay, but my crypto, I can't. I should have traded it that minute and pulled it out. But now, you know, I owe American Express thousands of dollars, but I only got paid a nickel in crypto. Hey, that's my reality, and I'm sticking to it. I'm not leaving either.
Yeah, it might be a good time to like overdraft the bank account now, huh? To buy more crypto at the cheap levels.
Ooh, I went for some injective. Don't think I didn't trade some of those coins when that injective went down 50%. No. I got me some injective. I like injective. It's in the Cosmos ecosystem. They're good.
Should I find someone?
from his injective. Let's see what happened to injective. Oh, wow. It went down to $18. No shit.
Yes. I bought that deal. You know, I also...
See? You know what I'm talking about.
It is only now back up to its previous high level again. So this is the first time I bought Injective. I bought it at $25 and sold it at like $42.
It's a next Solana, bro. Injective. You can see it's a next Solana. You're going to see massive bull run in 2024.
This Solana is barely this Solana.
That's a good point.
Solana because NFT artists went over there and put a bunch of NFTs and everybody bought it and they thought it was hyped up. Otherwise, there was no Solana.
No, actually, Injective is building something. Like in Injective EVM, you can see there is lots of things going on. And they are also building like CW404 token standards and Injective is, you know, they are totally building super, super fast technology and the fees are really low. I mean, in Cosmos, this is the best chain. Injective is the best chain in whole Cosmos.
Dude, I don't even understand like commodities and trading and all that fancy stuff, but I understand what Injective is doing and I'm going to go stand there. Yep, for sure.
See, Sergi?
There's no lack of coins.
See, people also love Injective.
You have like the second Injective fan in the room.
Yes, absolutely.
That has to say something, because like, let's say there's like 10 billion people on this planet, and you two represent like the planet, and this room represents the planet. Then a substantial portion of the people of the world are going to want Injective tokens. Pretty much, yeah. Right? Like that's how you could do the math on this. It's like this room is a survey of reality.
It's a microcosm, for sure.
A microcosm, yeah. There's the word. Like SJ got a good score on the SAT or whatever when he was getting...
Also, I think people still go by with vibes. So when I went to Cosmoverse and I got to know about Injective, and when you see the people that are building these, that makes a difference too. You know, like, you know, you're like, okay, this is going to last.
Oh, you met the Injective, like the nerds?
Well, yeah. And also, you know, some of the other movers and shakers. And so then you get a sense for the integrity of the team that's building. You can't get that unless you're on the ground. So that's it.
So describe your experience with the Injective team of nerds. Like, are they just better nerds than the other nerds? Are they like funnier or what? Like, what's their vibe?
Well, first of all, they're super smart. They figured out what needs to be happening. They have the technology. They understand, number one, they understand they need to be in the Cosmos ecosystem. So that right there makes them smarter than everybody else. And then what they've built is smart. And then the people who are running the shit, it's like, okay, these are seasoned real world people who've done other awesome shit and it's been established. They know what they're doing. So you know, when everything starts checking, when you start checking off the box, okay, the technology's sound, these people know what they're doing, they understand what this is, they're in the right place, and the people who are going to market them and fund them and bring them to the masses, they're also awesome. So yeah, I'm in a little group with the powerful women of Cosmos. So I have behind the scenes information about what's going on, who's doing what, and we talk. And so, yeah, it's inside information. And so when all that adds up and then, you know, the market takes a dump, oh, I've been wanting to get some injective. So yeah, I did that. So that happened. And me telling you, everybody else is going to hear that. And it may or may not affect going forward.
It's
going
to go absolutely viral because of this conversation is what you're saying.
They're going to go read about it. They're not going to go buy it because I said it, but they're going to be interested in it. And then they're going to verify that what I said may or may not be true. And then that will go viral. So yeah, Osmosis, when Osmosis came out, I was all over Osmosis. Nobody knew what Osmosis was. And I was like, Osmosis, Osmosis. Oh my God. It's so, Osmosis was like playing Miss Pac-Man because I've been doing crypto and this, and then they all of a sudden made this beautiful interface. And I felt like I was playing Miss Pac-Man, moving my crypto around. It all worked and everything was great. Yeah. And Osmosis went up to $11. So a lot of it is with, you can't be everywhere doing everything when you go to these conferences, but you know, the people that you do meet and the projects that you've studied about, you can say yay or nay. Like Crescent, I saw Crescent at Cosmoverse. I felt sorry for them. They already sunsetted. You know, they didn't.
Crescent just kind of like came out as some sort of a dex or something, and it came out and it disappeared, and like just one of those things. They never got any traction. I remember catching the airdrop last season, like 3-4 years ago. It's been a bit. Anyway, I just recognized the name. That's why I chimed in.
I love that Omen. You know, whatever she's saying. I agree with him. I agree with her.
Vikram is in love with Sandy because of this shared interest in Injective. By the way, a worthy thing to check out if you're at your desktop at the moment is check out app.transporter.io. And this is not related to like the Statham movies or anything. This is like, so this is the Chainlink CCIP like cross-chain bridge, which means you can convert from any token that is on the CCIP network that currently is Arbitrum, Avalanche, Base, BNB, Ethereum, Optimism, Polygon, and WeMix to any other chain. You can swap like coin to coin, which is kind of cool. So like, let me try something here. I hooked up with it because I'm just playing with it. So let's say I have some ETH and I need to go to BNB to go pick up some, you know, whatever tokens. Like, so any tokens that are on both ETH mainnet and BNB, you can swap them. Now, Ethereum, they don't have too many. Let's pick another one here. Let's do Polygon to BNB. Since, so you can swap tokens on there. And it's basically like, you're getting the capability of basically going from any CCIP to any CCIP chain, which is kind of cool. But that's kind of like the future of this, I think. And that's the only thing about Cosmos that makes me nervous is that this user experience, once it's baked into everything, is just simply more straightforward than the Cosmos user experience. The best way to describe the problem in Cosmos is if I have Injective on the Injective chain, then for it to get to Osmosis, which is the one of the bigger dexes on in the Cosmos, that's a different chain. You have to transport the token Injective to Osmosis, and Osmosis you'll have a Osmosis version of that coin. Now it has a like IBC, interblockchain communication, is basically a cross-chain bridging solution that's quite secure. But here's the problem. If I have the sort of like, imagine it's a wrapped Injective token, but it's on Osmosis, but I want to now send that to Kujira. I cannot do that directly. I have to go back to, I have to convert this back to the native Injective, and then I have to convert it and send it to Kujira. So you have to cross two chains in order to make this happen. So what does that mean? This is the hub and spoke model, where imagine if you had a city like Manhattan, you had a bunch of buildings there. Imagine that every single building you wanted to travel between, you had to have a direct route for every single building, meaning a subway station would need to have a subway track to every other building in the entire city. And every other building would have to have a track to every other building. So you'd have a gigantic spiderweb looking thing. Whereas with the way Chainlink CCIP works is the network is different in that CCIP keeps track of what chain your assets are on. And it's basically like a gigantic swimming pool under Manhattan, whereas like you basically go down into a gigantic cave underneath Manhattan. You can walk to any other building. And from that building, you can walk to any other building without going back to the originating building. So you can just basically have this swimming pool of assets under the city, and you can travel from one place to the other, no problem whatsoever. So that user experience is a bit different in that, like, let's say you're a new Cosmos chain. You have to build channels to every single chain, other chain that you want to connect to. So if Osmosis wants to connect to Kajira, it would have to create a particular channel for that. So it's not automatic that just because you spin up a Cosmos chain, you're now connected to all the other Cosmos chains. That's not the case. You have to have a relayer network who, at this point, doesn't have a great way of being paid, by the way, is the other problem with Cosmos, is that relaying is a thing that's right now mostly volunteer basis. But if you had high volume, you start having problems with like slowing down with the relaying and stuff too. There's never been enough volume to sort of overwhelm that sort of thing so far, so it's not been a big deal, but scalability is kind of a concern. But with CCIP, it's interesting with this chain link system. Every chain, so like the moment you join the CCIP network, let's say you're Injective and you incorporate CCIP into the blockchain and you supply some Injective tokens into the CCIP liquidity pool or whatever you call it, then what ends up happening is anybody can show up at your chain just by going like through this system. And you can basically, like, the moment you connect your chain to this network, you now have access to all the other chains on the network immediately, which is really cool. It's like plugging your, you know how if you plug in your laptop into the internet, you know, then you now have access to the entire internet. You don't have to have an Ethernet cable to Amazon.com and another Ethernet cable to Google Mail and whatever. Like, that would be a really weird user experience. And it's also, it'd be a weird user experience for someone building a new website, because if you have a website on the internet, you can link to anything on the internet, right? Like, that's the point. That would not be the case. The way Cosmos works is, if you, let's say you were building a website on the internet, it's like every single thing that you want to connect your website to, you would have to create a channel for. And, you know, one argument can be made that, okay, so what? Like, not every chain needs to connect to everything. But the point is, when you have a competitor that does have that capability, if you're a new developer and you're like, hey, where am I going to, you know, connect my new chain to, and how am I going to connect it? It makes more sense to go through CCIP. So I think even Cosmos chains, my question is going to be, like, in 4 years, are most people going to be using Cosmos IBC, which is this hub and spoke model, or are even Cosmos chains going to use CCIP? Because really, if you think about it, like, CCIP makes app chains make a lot of sense, because Solana's problem is, you, like, if the chain gets too busy, it crashes, right? So throughput's a problem. So clearly we need to have infinite throughput. And the way you get infinite throughput is infinite chains. The problem is, when you have infinite chains, you get chain fragmentation, liquidity fragmentation. So what CCIP does is it makes Cosmos usable, interestingly. It makes the app chain thesis make sense in terms of scalability. The problem, only problem with app chains is, if you have infinite scalable chains, that means block space becomes infinitely cheap. So that's the other flip side to that. So it's like, you know, what's the economic model that works? Well, this is the reason why I just bought a bunch of Chainlink tokens, because, like, you pay for the, in the background with Chainlink tokens, to convert any coin to any coin. And as more and more coins just get built onto this type of thing, this transporter site's likely to become much more useful, much more popular. And interestingly, you can build this transporter into any wallet you build. So, like, say, for example, MetaMask or Coinbase's wallet or whatever you use, those wallets can now incorporate this also. So, like, you'll be able to easily swap between, say, ETH and BNB or whatever else you want, without any external routing mechanisms, without any external bridging. Like, the entire thing is baked in. it's pretty awesome. So this is like the solution for the consumer crypto experience. I think like if you wait another 4 years and if you see a widespread use of this, like crypto is going to be way easier to use. And most people won't even know what chain they're on. Like it's going to get to the point where it doesn't even matter. Pretty interesting. So definitely some narrative thinking as far as like what to consider in terms of like how much to invest in any one particular chain being the quote unquote winner. CCIP makes them all winners and all losers in the sense that like all winners and that anyone can connect anything, all losers in the sense that like liquidity becomes something that the end user is not married to a chain anymore. The only thing that matters then is like what product you're selling. So what's cool is like, let's say NFTs, like Sandra likes NFTs. You can basically put the CCIP architecture on an NFT project, and now it can travel between any chain. And you can actually go like, if for example, you might have an NFT, CCIP NFT based NFT platform, let's say, for example, on Polygon. And if that same system is built into, say, Stargaze, you now would be able to sell an NFT on Stargaze. You'd be able, even though it originated at Stargaze, you'd be able to sell it at Arbitrum or Optimism or Polygon or whatever. And if you bought one there, you could sell it on Stargaze. Like they'd be just cross compatible at that point, which is pretty cool. So it'd be more like how your experience is with like, let's say you have a, I don't know, like, you know, a Yamaha branded CD player, and you take your CD and you stick it in the Denon branded CD player and it still works. This is the idea there, like cross compatibility, where the end user does not have to know what chain they're on and why they're like on that chain and all that shit. And the end application, because it's CCIP, they're like, you buy an NFT on your application, you won't even necessarily know which DEX it came from or which chain. The end user doesn't care at that point. So it's going to really like,
yes, I think yes, clearly, that right there, that one thing you just said among all the other beautiful things is so important. That is what we're waiting on. Thank you. Oh my God. This is just amazing.
Interoperability, when you're talking about that, that'll drive just so many retail users into dipping into their bags.
I think it'll drive corporate users in particular. The retail folks sort of like will go wherever it's easiest. Corporations are usually the one that try to make the product as easy as possible in the long run. But imagine you are Coca-Cola and you have some reason why you have some NFT you're producing. Why would you want to like figure out which chain is going to be around in 5 years or 10 years? Why do you care about this? You don't. You want to be able to produce in a cross-compatible standard. It was the same thing with movie houses. Like, you know, when each time like you had the Betamax versus VHS war, you had the DVD versus, you know, HD DVD or whatever the hell it was called. You had HD DVD versus Blu-ray. They had these like format wars over time. And what's frustrating to the end user with format wars, of course, is, well, like half the products aren't made in the format you have, which is a problem. Or a company like a movie house had to make movies in more than one format. So they had to make an HD DVD and they had to make it in Blu-ray. But what would end up happening is those consortiums used to be like controlled by particular movie houses and by particular brands like Samsung or whoever. So what ends up happening is the consumer would have to have two devices because the movie they wanted to watch was not available on the device that they have, which is insane. So that whole thing. So what you're seeing here is like that playing out in a nutshell. And I think Chainlink's like system, like this is why I took a large bag of Chainlink tokens, which is, by the way, you know, cut in half from the top right now, just like everybody else. But I bought that because like it's a play on this idea. And over the long run, it's like if I look 4, 5, 10 years out from now, like what does the user experience for all of this stuff even look like? You know, and I think that's what it looks like. And the problem is that like for 4 to 5 years from now, if you think there's a lot of coins and projects now, like, you know, where does that trend go towards infinity? There's like, you know, so how does any one project get liquidity? The historical concept was, well, there's 10 billion people on the planet and only some fraction of those people are in crypto. So we haven't reached super saturation or super cycle yet where like most of the world gets onboarded. And they certainly aren't going to get onboarded with freaking, you know, seed phrases and, you know, the existing wallets. That's just bullshit. It's not going to happen. You need user abstraction. You need like the ability to KYC if you had to. and you had to, and you have to have some privacy, and you have to have cross-chain compatibility. Once all that's layered in there, then, you know, the chain that you're on becomes largely irrelevant, and the end user is only going to notice that they're using a specific wallet or browser. So like the brand name of MetaMask might do well, or, you know, whatever. Even the Chainlink ecosystem, you may not even realize you're using Chainlink, the same way you don't realize you're using TCP/IP when someone goes on online and buys something on Amazon. They're not thinking about the underlying infrastructure at all. They're not thinking of the routers and the wires and the cables under the ocean and all that shit that happens when you use the internet, right? They're just sort of using the internet, and they just go, and it becomes a product-facing world where it's like the apps matter, not so much the infrastructure underneath. And I think the blockchain space is going to be in that same boat. And I think you're seeing that already. Like when you see people buying blockchain coins, like layer ones, like, you know, Injective, or they're buying Kujira or whatever. The reality is nobody knows where to put their money. They're like, wait, there's all these different chains. Some of them look interesting. Some of them not so much. And then they're like, ooh, maybe I'll buy a little bit of this one, a little bit of that one. So either your attention is being fragmented or your liquidity is being fragmented. And then the same thing is happening to the people building the blockchains. They're like, wait a minute, like all these other chains are showing up. We do have good tech, but how do we, you know, are people really in it for the tech? Or are people, what user experience they want? Like, is it really that much different user experience on Solana versus Injective versus, you know, Stargaze or whatever? You know, like, you know, you're buying and selling digital, you know, magic internet money. Like it's very similar in that respect. So
the tech, you know, enthusiasm is like just going to go crazy. Like you saw what happened with the Rabbit R1. Like people see a new thing and they just go bonkers.
Yeah. So like
except for Apple Vision Pro, that didn't really.
There's some of these tech driven narrative plays for sure, where coin prices go up for a while. But the question is not what happens after a first pump and dump. The question is like, let's say you have a layer one blockchain coin, and it goes up in value for, you know, the coming bull market. Is it going to catch a bid and also break its previous high in the next bull market? Or it's going to start putting in lower highs and sort of stabilize and just sort of like, you know, survive at some level? That's the question that is not fully clear when it comes to the dynamics of layer ones and like which ones to buy and stuff. I think like layer ones are in like an interesting area where you're either buying the ones that are like super blue chip, or you're buying the ones that are super low market cap, because like at least there's a lot of upside. So you're like, oh, hey, like if this thing 10x is, it's, you know, it's plausible because it's only a $50 million market cap, like a Zephyr. If it goes to 500, you know, dollars, that's already a 10x essentially. And you're basically still at a $500 million market cap or whatever, not $500, $500 million market cap. So either you're buying like something really cheap that has a high upside, if it catches attention, or you're getting something that's like more blue chip-ish, like a Chainlink or Ethereum or something, where it's like the odds that they're going to go to zero are low and they'll probably have good growth ahead of them and stuff. So yeah, interesting. How this is all playing out. But I do think like they just opened up, like Ethereum mainnet was just connected to this transporter thing, which allows you to convert from, you know, like ETH mainnet directly to Optimism, for example. So for example, on transporter.io, you have the ability to convert from Ethereum mainnet to Optimism. You can convert ETH, USDC, and a few other coins, wrapped ETH and a few other things. But like you have native, essentially CCIP native Ethereum can transfer between Ethereum, Optimism, and then from Optimism, you can like, let's say I go to Optimism, let's do this real quick. So if I pull up on my selections on here, so I transferred something from ETH to Optimism. Now let's go pick Optimism as the network that I am sending from. And let's see if I can send that same Ethereum somewhere else, let's say to Polygon mainnet. I cannot. I can only do USDC with that for some reason. So they don't have all of the different coins connected to everything at the moment, I guess. So I'm not sure exactly how that precisely works, but maybe it's because they don't have enough liquidity. That may be what it is. It's not so much that you can't connect them. It's just that someone has to produce a background DEX to make it work. But yeah, USDC, you can definitely swap directly from one to the other without swapping. Pretty cool stuff. So let's say if I go from Polygon to Base,
USDC's available there as well. So I can basically just jump from one to the other, no problem. Let's see about the only one different, substantially different here is, let's say, can you go to BNB here? They don't have it. It's not connected with Polygon to BNB for some reason. Interesting. Not that I really use BNB much. It's just kind of, I'm just curious what can connect to what. So let's see, BNB.
Fucking XMR getting delisted off Binance was bullish for me.
Yeah. XMR, yeah, it's going to be delisted from Kraken Europe as well, apparently, because of the their new laws and whatnot. Yeah, on Transporter, you can go from BNB to Arbitrum, Ethereum, Polygon, and WeMix. Let's see what coins are allowable. So if I want to go to BNB to Arbitrum, I can only transmit, there's only a few random tokens, CKP, LAND, RDP, and SCT. I have no idea what those are. So not every coin goes everywhere. I think it depends on the liquidity available. So that, but yeah, I think stuff's going to improve very quickly as far as liquidity is concerned. There's just not a lot of people probably bridging between BNB and Ethereum. So that's probably why there's not a lot of options here. Anyway, pretty cool stuff. But that's transporter.io. Worth taking a look. You can connect a MetaMask wallet to it. You can connect a Coinbase wallet to it.
Lee Pace is the name of the actor that plays Cleon.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, you were mentioning from the movie earlier. Yeah, from Foundation. Yeah, that guy was cool. Yeah, you can use Wallet Connect. You can use Coinbase wallet and MetaMask with this thing. Pretty good.
Cephal, don't forget to send me your OmniFlix wallet. I have a gift for you. I'm going to jump down and go cook up an omelet. And
let me go find
catch up.
That. Yeah, give me
nice just to meet you, Sandy. See you again.
Thanks, everybody. Enjoyed the conversation, and I learned a lot from the conversation as well. I like the comedy relief, and I really like how it gets serious. It's just the flow is interesting, you know, that these spaces, it gets really serious. And then it gets funny. We went from phallic symbol to price of gas to Chainlink.
The rocket phallus.
Yeah, that was it was quite the exciting morning. Thank you so much. I needed the
book. Yeah, a lot of it. Keep supporting Injective.
Keep supporting Injective. You know.
I like to make art. I like to buy art. I like to make videos about art I bought, and I like to go to conferences. And I did crypto long before I did NFTs, and I kind of marvel at the human capacity to shove art wherever we get the chance. That is the beauty of what we're doing. And then there's the smart guys who build the systems. I don't know how the engine of the car was built. I just know I like to drive it.
Right. Not everyone knows to know everything about everything. Let me see if I can find a...
I'm bullish on AGI becoming virtually omniscient.
Yeah. That's coming soon, I think. I now think that's sooner than we imagine. Okay, I'm trying to find her an address here. OmniFlix. There we go.
Sophie, I was saying, like, you know, her accent is exactly, you know, really beautiful, like, you know, hosting a TV show.
You know, she has a TV show accent of some kind.
Yes, kind of looks like.
Oh my god! Hollywood if TV I had show. Daughters, I would want Cephal to have his son come marry one of my daughters. I mean, you know, in the old days, women would, you know, respond to a big, muscular man who could lift a truck or whatever, you know. But now, it's the power of the mind and the intelligence and being able to. You know, be the warrior in that way. So yeah, women get excited by, you know, the intelligence of men who understand how the world works and bring security to us and give us advice. I feel protected in your space, Cephal. I feel very protected. And I know maybe that's not a very feminist thing to say, but I like...
I don't even know what that means.
It means it's okay to be intelligent and to give information and to encourage people to want to take responsibility for their lives. And you know, that's an alpha trait. And a lot of people think, oh, you shouldn't call people alphas and betas. And I remind them, in the old days, you know, there had to be somebody who went around the mountain to fight the tiger and the bear.
Split Sunday.
And then the other guys waited. And that's all right.
Can I talk about wolves for a second? Like, the classic alpha stays at the back of the pack so that the weak and the ill don't.
Yeah, I'm not some frontline warrior, that's for sure.
But that's only wolves that are under threat. In a normal happy wolf society,
from harm.
Yeah, there's no like alpha that has to fight the youngest male for the fucking pack and shit. It's actually like a lot more pro-social.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I'm the dude that generally tends to be like protected, as opposed to being the one out there like fighting, you know, right in the front line or whatever.
But you're a doctor. You're right there. You know, we were just talking about obesity.
It's harder to replace me.
Yeah, no, you were talking about obesity. And so you're out there on the front line. You're dealing with the individuals that you're giving them the information. Dude, if you don't stop smoking, you're going to die.
What I mean by front line, in a war, I mean, I wouldn't be the one like literally on the front line of a battlefield is what I'm saying.
I understand. No. That's a different warrior. Those kind of people, they don't plan they're not the strategic people who plan it. They go out and deliver it. So yeah, no, that's a different type of person.
Yeah. It was like during like COVID, for example, like they would have to keep me alive. So they would a lot of different procedures and things would not be done by me because if I were to perish, they can't replace me. So it's one of those things. So it's an interesting way that works.
I reckon you'd really, have you seen Madam Web, Sophie?
I have not. Why should I?
The Madam Web herself, Dakota Johnson's EMT or like a paramedic or something. And it's really cool.
Yeah. That would be a bit more frontline. Yeah, where you're directly involved interfacing with the real world.
Well, anybody who's here is a pioneer and understands the importance of literacy. Thanks for having these spaces. Thanks for bringing information to us. Thanks for giving me your wallet address so I can gift you my artwork, because that's what gives me pleasure, is to make artwork and that's it. I had to work 50 years, do other stuff, so I could finally be an artist, you know, full time. That's really fun.
Nice. Ma'am, you are a nice person also.
Thank you. Please tell my son that. Please tell him that. He doesn't like it when I scold him and I tell him not to buy those Chipotle $10 burritos for $36 on my Uber card. He does not think I'm a nice person at all. Thanks, though. I love you.
No, that's your son loves you so much.
Yeah, my teenager now runs the bookkeeping for my company. So it's like he gets paid on his little bank account or whatever. And then he uses his card to just buy whatever he wants with it. So, but every month he's got to take care of bookkeeping duties and stuff and whatever. So he can learn the business a bit.
Yeah, I started running books, and like, it's a really exportable skill. Like, if you got mates that have companies, whatever, self-employed, your son can use his spreadsheets, whatever, like his algorithms to do their book.
No, a good general, is once you're finishing up high school level, a person should have at least, like, it's not a hard skill to learn, in the sense that like general bookkeeping is something that you could put food in your mouth with and not be homeless, pretty readily. But anyway, yeah, Bikram, you're saying.
I just want to share some personal my story also. Like, you know, I never share myself. So, you know, I always wanted to be some kind of funny person, like comedian or like Joker or something like that. I always love people laughing, you know. and always make, I love to make people happy and some kind of things like that, you know. But that was, I plan to become a stand-up comedian or something, but life changes and I ended up in being accountant. And I, why I love your spaces, because, you know, in this space, I can share my comedy, you know, I can make people laugh and share some funny stuffs. And this is why I created it, so many profiles, and use it for making people, you know, happy, so they can change their minds, toxicity out of their brain, and make a world peaceful. You know, that's what comedy do. That's what, that's the power of comedy. You know, this is why, you know, I always wanted to win, like, you know, this is, if this is my real job, I would love to do that. But my real life job is kind of sucks, bro. And, you know, I hate to do that things. And what I love, you know, I can do these spaces and I can do comedy things. I can do these things every day.
So you need to start like a Indian comedy club restaurant where you walk around and make fun with the people, and then you like, then what you do is you call them retards periodically.
Yes, that's, you know, Indians are not, you know, respectable persons. You know, this, if I do these things in India, they will treat me like a clown and they will make my life miserable. You know, you.
It's, but just, yeah, it's not respectable there, huh?
Yes, no. Absolutely, 100%. The comedy person are not respectable in this areas and in this countries, in this type of countries. You know, they here powerful persons are attractive. Here, what people attract in third worlds, like gangsters and other things. You can see the African guys. They are attracted by drugs and gangsters and pop music, hip hop music, but they do not attracted by comedy and other things. So this is why you can see the black people become so all, you know, in the criminal line, you know, they are engaged in crime lines so early. This is the culture of in my country, you know. That's the problem.
But that's an America that you see, though. That's not like the untold stories of, like, that's like the visible hip hop culture.
I have no idea about America, but I never go there. I live in India. So I see these American peoples are so much, you know, intellectual and so much respectable, and they give people respect, and whatever the people like, the comedy, the troll, they love it. And, you know, this is why I love being the spaces with the Western people, like American and British guys.
It's also important if you're from a, like, whatever country you're from, it's really, really important to form really, really deep stereotypes about everybody else. That's always a good sign.
Yes. This is why, you know, this is why I love these spaces, because the United States peoples are developed and they are respectable.
I really want to do the Lumbini pilgrimage.
What is that?
Where you, like, walk to where the Buddha was born and to the tree, the Bodhi tree and stuff.
Oh, okay. Why did you have this, like, dream to do this?
Because I was looking at the map of, like, the Kathmandu area, and you can walk from Kathmandu to the Buddha's birthplace in, like, 15 days, I think.
Okay, gang. I think I'm going to catch you guys later. I have to cook up some food here, get some things ready, maybe hop on later this evening or something. All right. Catch everyone later.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting
politic. I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, though the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Ten Spaces.